Welcome to Arts Waves. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Margot Hall, who is an actor who is in Gem of the Ocean by August Wilson, which is playing through February 14th at Marin Theater Company in Mill Valley. Margot Hall teaches acting and directing at UC Berkeley, has been several productions in the Bay Area, including Ah Wilderness at ACT, 12th Night at Cal Shakes, Raisin in the Sun, also Cal Shakes, an earlier August Wilson play, Fences in Marin, The Mother with the Hat at San Francisco Playhouse, Winter's Tale as well at Cal Shakes, a lot of Shakespeare, which we'll get into. Also has been in a couple of films with Josh Kornbluth, Love and Taxes and Haiku Tunnel. And if we go back, was also in a couple of episodes of Nash Bridges.
Oh, wow. Long time ago.
Let's first talk about Gem of the Ocean. Now, August Wilson created this 10-play cycle, and this is the first play chronologically, but the second-to-last play that he wrote. Yeah. Now, you grew up in Detroit. You have been an actress, actor. Do you like the term actor or actress better?
Actor is just a little more simple. I just go with that.
You've been an actor for quite a while. How did you first find out about August Wilson? I mean, was it at the very beginning? Did you know about him before you started taking classes?
No, actually, unfortunately, I did not learn about August Wilson in my undergraduate school or graduate school. I think it was maybe my third year of graduate school when I started learning about August Wilson. I really wish I had been exposed to it when I was in high school. It's been quite interesting to come to August Wilson at such a late time in my career. And unfortunately, I missed an opportunity to play a lot of the great younger characters in August Wilson. But who knows? I might still play them.
You never met him, though, right?
No, I've never met him. I've met a lot of people who knew him. So that's the closest I've come to meeting the man himself.
His take is essentially the African-American experience set in Pittsburgh in the Hill District. Over 10 plays, each play takes place in a different decade of the 20th century. How many of them have you been in so far?
I've done two before this, Seven Guitars and Fences here, both at Marin. This is my third one. So everyone was really surprised when I said that Seven Guitars was my first August Wilson play. And they were like, what? You've never? I said, I know, I've never had an opportunity. And unfortunately, it's not often done out here. I applaud Marin for taking on that task of trying to do all of the plays in the cycle.
Why do you think August Wilson isn't performed as much?
You know, I'm not sure. I know on the East Coast it's performed more, and I feel like in Chicago, Minnesota, I'm sure the Guthrie. The last time I saw August Wilson, it was at ACT, but that was many, many years ago. I don't think ACT has done an August Wilson in quite some time. I'm not quite sure why. They're amazing plays. And I think with Marin doing them, the audiences here are like, where have these plays been? You know, so they're really excited about them because a lot of them hadn't heard of August Wilson.
Which is surprising because he's one of the greatest playwrights of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Gem of the Ocean, you play a character who, now I don't recall from the August Wilson I've seen, I don't recall mention of her, but apparently she had been mentioned in all of the other plays, yes. Aunt Esther, and she's a 285-year-old former slave,
yes.
The matriarch of all of August Wilson's plays.
Yes, that's quite a mouthful. Yes, she's the matriarch. She is the one who starts the cycle. If you think about where this play takes place in history, the Africans have been brought over to America, and they are now considered African American, and they're grappling with their identity and everything they've lost from Africa and what they have acquired here in the States. So it's a really precious time. It's past 1865 when there was this booming period, a wonderful period, and now we're in 1904 where we're dealing with Jim Crow and all of these other things are starting to come back into play. And you have this house, which is considered a sanctuary, where this woman who's 285 lives, and you go on this fantastic journey. But in order, I think, to create the spirituality of this piece, you need to ground it in someone who has that history, who has been carrying memories for all these people for over 285 years.
And that would be the reason why he chose to create this fantastical character, because she has that history.
Yes, she has that history.
For you as the actor playing that character, how do you deal with that, or do you just deal with it more on the surface and let the words come through?
Yes, well, the way Daniel is dealing with it, who is our director, Daniel Alexander Jones, we're approaching this with a jazz aesthetic, jazz theater, and we're not doing makeup for Aunt Esther. Aunt Esther incorporates all different types of people. So she can be young, she can be a little girl at times, she can be the older woman, she can be the teacher, all of these things come through in this production. So we're not focusing on, oh, she's old and she's, you know, can't hardly walk, none of that. And it also is because I'm playing Aunt Esther. So to use the skills of me as an actress, my flexibility, my ability to transform into all of these different types of faces of Aunt Esther is to Daniel a lot more interesting than it just being the matriarch.
So at some point, do you just kind of change from a young person to an old person?
Well, it's not even that literal. It's just that all of those people inhabit Aunt Esther. So technically, you see a woman who is older and is living in this sanctuary. But there are times when the histories that she carries just kind of comes into her body. It's not like she's channeling her. I don't want to set up that expectation.
Right.
But I think when you see when it's directed, it's just that she's capable of calling on all of the parts of herself. And they don't manifest in a way of trickery or anything like that.
Margot Hall, you said it's a jazz production. What do you mean by that? Is the jazz music coming through during the production?
The type of work that Daniel does is called jazz theater. So all of our characters are based on different chords of a jazz composition. Like sometimes you're a saxophone, sometimes you're the flute, sometimes you're the trumpet. And all of these chords play into each other. So the staging is non-traditional. There are moments when Aunt Esther's standing on a trunk. There are moments when the elements, we don't have food in this production. You know, August Wilson is known for your cooking, the biscuits, the all of this. What we have is a very sparse stage. So we're using the words, the language, and these beautiful photos that he creates on stage. And they create sort of this collage, like jazz, like a jazz aesthetic.
How does that differ? I mean, do you perform Esther all that differently than you would even in a regular, more traditional production, or as you perform, say, in a play like Fences?
I think that the core of the work has to be the play itself.
Right.
And you start with that. Esther is still the woman of wisdom who has these amazing words that she shares with Citizen and the other characters. So you never leave that. I think what this type of process does is it frees you from the limitations of being an older set, sit in a chair, the whole play and talk. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. It's been done brilliantly. But I do think this just kind of brings it off the page in a different way. So, of course, I'm still grounded in who Aunt Esther is and her strength and wisdom and her deep, deep knowledge of the ocean and the water. But at the same time, I could be saying something and walking in a circle. So it just opens it up in a different way.
That would be a little more exciting than sitting in a chair, I guess.
Yes, but it's been done both ways.
Really? It's been done this way before?
Oh, well, no. I've never done it this way before. I've never seen it this way before. So I think it's really exciting. I mean, all of us in the cast are really jazzed about it, no pun intended.
What do you see as the specific themes of this play as opposed to the other plays of August Wilson?
Well, this is his most spiritual play. This play really talks about the people who didn't make it across the water. So it deals with the slaves who lost their lives into the ocean. And you have to go into the ocean to the city of bones in order to reclaim yourself and to live in truth. So that sense of a huge spirituality and these people trusting that they are able to cleanse themselves through going through the City of Bones. I think in all August Wilson plays, you have the theme of love. You have the theme of dealing with the past and trying to incorporate it into the future. But for me, this play is so close to the past, is so close to that cusp where we were trying to find our identities, that it's just a deeper sense of that connection to the motherland than I think a lot of the other plays.
Margot Hall, you recently were in Ah Wilderness, which was a colorblind production.
Yes.
How do you feel about colorblindness? I talked to John Lahr, who said that August Wilson's attitude toward colorblind casting was that African Americans should have their own work.
Yes.
So that's different than, say, casting something like Ah Wilderness. How do you feel about that?
I think that non-traditional casting has to be done with a very keen eye. And I feel like if the story is based on a person's culture, then it should not be non-traditionally cast. If you're doing an Irish play that's based on Irish culture and it's very specific to that culture, then it should be cast accordingly. August Wilson plays deal with the Black experience, the Black aesthetic. And I agree that it should be cast with an all African American cast, unless there's a character named Selig in our production, which is a Caucasian who comes in and out of the home of Aunt Esther. But I'm very specific about non-traditional casting. I think Ah Wilderness, for me, was something that Mark Rucker really wanted to do. And he felt like this is an O'Neill play. It's been done all the time with a straight cast, if you want to call it that. And he felt like he could play with that a little bit in saying that all of these people have these experiences. Nothing central in that play.
Right.
That, you know, there's not a slave and a master. So there's nothing central in that that connotates you have to have these people be of a particular race. And if you're going to do it that way, then do it all the way.
It seemed to me that the idea of casting Asian kids mm-hmm. kind of set it up so that you could play the aunt there.
Yes. It's funny because if you think about it, I was playing Aunt Lily in 1906. And now I'm playing Aunt Esther in 1904. And they're totally different characters. What two different life experiences of these women. I think about that a lot.
You also played a man in Twelfth Night. Not merely a man, but actually the comic relief of the show.
Yes.
And that was talking about non-traditional casting. To me, that worked entirely because virtually everybody on stage was a woman.
Right. That was a blast. That was so much fun. Girl power. yeah, we were so excited about that production. And I've always wanted to play Sir Andrew Aguecheek. And I thought, I'll never get to play that part. I would see it all the time and go, wow. Of course, I'd have to play like Viola or Olivia, but I would love to play Sir Andrew. And so when I got that opportunity, wow, it was just a blast. It was great. I mean, people see me as such the heavy all the time.
Right.
But I really do love comedy, so I got to show a little bit of that.
You're listening to an interview with Margo Hall, who plays Aunt Esther in Gem of the Ocean by August Wilson, which plays through February 14th at Marin Theater Company in Mill Valley. I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves. You also appeared as the matriarch Lena in Raisin in the Sun. That's another matriarch. How does that compare to these to this other role, you think?
Wow, yeah. Lena was a very specific character. It was written in a very specific time, and that was also an amazing experience. I was surprised that I got to play Lena again, because she's supposed to be this older woman, and in that play, we went totally the opposite. We added weight with a fat suit and just created this whole other character for me and grounded her in that way. And that was, it was done, you know, it's realism. Both of these plays are realism. However, we're doing this one slightly different, whereas that was very traditional Lorraine Hansberry. Doing that at Cal Shakes was interesting because it was so realistic. We had running water on stage, all of these things that were new to Cal Shakes as well to create this environment. Again, you'll see this matriarch, Aunt Esther, is different than Lena.
Well, you know, a lot of actors bring their own persona to a role, and a lot of them are chameleons. They change completely. In that spectrum, where do you see yourself, or do you even not even think about that?
I think I am a chameleon in a lot of ways. I do think that I can transform into different characters. I mean, I played Bottom also for Cal Shakes, which was crazy. And I also think, and I think this is true for all actors, it's still you. It's still you on stage. And you can add a hat and makeup and fat suits and all of that. But there's something about your inner essence that's always going to come through. And I think that's a good thing. I think a lot of times when I approach my Aunt Esther, she is someone who is sort of like a Lena Horne, whereas someone else's Aunt Esther might be like Mahalia Jackson. So again, it's my sensibility that I'm bringing to the role, at the same time honoring all the words that I'm saying. But it's still Margo Hall playing Aunt Esther.
When you get a role, let's take two roles, Aunt Esther and let's say the role in Fences, Rose in Fences. You didn't audition for these. They approached you, correct?
I did audition for Rose.
Oh, you did?
Because that director was from out of town, from Chicago. Yeah, I auditioned, and later that day, I got the call. I did audition for that. I did not audition for Aunt Esther.
So you get the call. At this point, I assume you've read the play?
Yes, I've read all of the August Wilson canon.
Okay, well, you also would do that for work, I mean, for teaching.
Yes, for teaching, yeah.
What is your first thought in approaching the role once you've read the play? You know, you're sort of beginning to start. What is your first thought? Where do you take it at that point?
It's different for each play. I think it's like, how familiar are you with the actual play? Do you need to read the play like 5 times? Or do you say, oh, I know this play like the back of my hand. I can go right into learning my lines, or I can go right into research. With Gem of the Ocean, I've read it in the past. I've seen it in the past. For this process, I started reading it again about 5 months out, and I would try to read it like every 3 days, just to really get familiar with the play. And then you start doing the research. You start doing the history research about the time period. Same thing with Our Wilderness, even though it was a much smaller part. You do want to research the time period. What was happening during that time? How would that affect your character? How do you think your character thought about the things that were going on at that time? And that's a big part of starting your process. Then you get into a room with everyone else and you start to listen. You start to tune in to who you're dealing with. You start to see who are these people. You look at them as humans, as who they are, their real names, and then, and you explore that relationship. You make a foundation there. And then you start to look at them as the character and how your character relates to them. But underneath that is still the bond of two people in a room together talking to each other. Then you just continue. Now the lines, you got to keep working on those lines because Aunt Esther has a lot of lines. Whenever you mention, I'm playing Aunt Esther, they go, oh, those lines. So it's been a process. Got to work on the lines.
Do you ever fear going up on them?
Oh, yeah, all the time. But I'm old enough now that, you know, when I was young, it would be like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out. Now you're just like, ooh, drop that one.
When I spoke with Lee Grant, she said that what threw her and stopped her from acting was when she went up on her lines on Broadway and Peter Falk didn't cover for her.
Oh, that's not nice. Yeah, you got to cover for each other. You always got, everyone has your back, you know. You know, you do the best you can. You stick to the script as much as you can. But the older you get, you know, that noggin.
Do you ever worry about losing your place in the blocking, or is that just less important?
Sure. I mean, we're human. Things happen. The thing is, it's live, and that's right. What makes it so wonderful. It's like, oh, I missed that. The main thing you worry about is how you will affect the other castmates. And you have to be there for them. And so you have to figure it out in the moment. But that's what makes it live. That's what makes it exciting.
Margo Hall, what about the audience? How does the audience play into that? Are you always aware that that audience is out there?
You are aware. And they do affect what you do. You try not to, but we're humans, you know. And, right. I mean, you have shows where you go, oh, they didn't like it. And then you come out for the curtain call and they're on their feet. You just never know. And sometimes people are tired. Friday nights are hard nights. They've been working all week. They come into a dark theater. Some of them are going to go to sleep. I don't care how dynamic you are.
But you've always got, at that point, you've always got your people on
yes,
stage.
You always
and
have
you could
each other.
Always come back to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you always come back to the work because ultimately that's the most important thing. And there's always one person out there whose life you could change, one person who you could inspire, one person who you could teach something to that they never knew. And that's what keeps you going.
And that's always in the back of your mind that there might be that one person?
Oh, yes. Might be that one person, that one, because I teach students and I know how much of an impact I have on their lives. So if they were to go and sit in the audience and see James Earl Jones or see Margo Hall or see Catherine Castellanos or anyone, if they say, wow, that person inspired me. You never know. They could be sitting out there. It could be an older adult who's dealing with issues of racism, who's dealing with issues and challenges around just the idea of what is black culture? Who are these people? And you may teach them something that will give them an insight into exploring other cultures.
Do you think these days that it's a little bit better for African American actors than it was? I read that when you first auditioned, you did a piece, your very first audition for Colored Girls,
yeah.
And it went over like a lead balloon, and then you did a traditional thing from Our Town.
Yes, yeah, that was true in the 80s to get into undergrad. I do think it's better now because we have so many amazing writers that, because of August Wilson, were like, wow, who is this man? He can do it. I can do it. We have so many amazing female African-American writers right now. Getting our work done is important. And we also have people who say, I don't need to wait for the big theaters. I'm going to produce it myself. So we're in that time now where you have Lynn Nottage, you have Susan Laurie Parks, Katori Hall, all of these amazing female playwrights. And you have Terrell McCraney, you have Marcus Gardley. And they're young. You know, a lot of these are, they're young. So they're going to have a whole lifetime of plays. And you got Coleman Domingo. So I think it's a very exciting time right now. And I also think that the theaters are starting to realize that these plays make money and that people are interested in the black experience.
What happened to Lorraine Hansberry Theater?
It's still going strong. We're producing two plays a year. I mean, when I say we, it's because I feel like it's part of my family. Stephen Anthony Jones is still doing that. I just directed him in Thurgood this summer. We don't have a space right now, so we kind of gypsies, but still producing two shows a year and hopefully getting back on our feet and being able to do more.
Are African American audiences going to theater more now than they did?
Oh, well, I can say over all the plays I've done, I've not seen a lot of African Americans in the audience. African American audience is in Oakland, but there's no real African American theater in Oakland. We have the Black Repertory Theater. I've only been there a couple times. I don't know what shows they do there. I'm sure they probably have a really good subscription audience. I'm just not privy to that audience. I think that when losing the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, that place on Sutter Street was really tough because we had a huge African-American subscription audience. I think that the more the theaters choose to do plays, cultural plays, not just African-American, but just any people of color plays, that they are trying to invite more audiences of color into the theaters. I'm hearing now that there is going to be a large African-American contingency coming to see Gem of the Ocean. There's a small theater group called Lower Bottom Players, which is located in Oakland at the Flight Deck. And they have done every August Wilson play over the last few years. And it's so exciting that this young company decided we're going to do August Wilson. So they've exposed, I think, a lot of the African-American community to August Wilson. Hopefully, the more Marin does these plays, the more the African-American audience will come out. We had a pretty good amount of African-Americans who came for Fences. So I'm hoping to get even more for Gem of the Ocean.
I think there's a company called Ubuntu.
Yes. Great company. I'm so proud of them. Young students, graduate students from UC San Diego. Very exciting group. They're here, started their own theater company. They remind me a lot of Campo Santo, which I was a founding member of way back when. They love Marcus Gardley, and they have just really hit the scene. They're a mixed company of all different races, and I'm just so excited for that company. I look forward to their season every year.
You've also been a director. How do you tackle a play differently as a director than as an actor?
Well, the director is in charge of all of the elements. So you have to come in and deal with the set and the sound and the lights. And you're at the head of the boat. You're, what is it, at the helm. And that's a whole nother type of position. It's a very exciting position, and it's also a very terrifying position. As an actor, you're playing your part. You're doing your job for that character. What I tell my students, you're playing your number, right? You're a number 6 in this scene. You're a number 4 in this scene. You're focusing on how your character drives the play. As the director, you have to focus on how all the characters drive the play and make sure that they are playing in accordance with your vision. The director, you have to have a vision for the play. As an actor, you live within the director's vision.
Speaking of director visions, the playwright to deal with when you're trying to find a vision is, of course, Shakespeare.
Yes.
When I spoke with John Moscone, we were talking about, I guess you call it, non-traditional settings for Shakespeare. He said that it's his view that creating that non-traditional setting, 1930s Germany, whatever it might be, is basically a way for the director to find the voice of the play, and it's really not that much for the audience.
That's interesting. I could see John saying that. You know, Shakespeare, how many times are you going to do Shakespeare? I will come back to this, but I will also say that's what Daniel says about August Wilson. He's like, we've seen every August Wilson play. You're getting to the point now where you're comparing, oh, that Aunt Esther was good. Oh, did you see so-and-so do Aunt Esther? Oh, did you see in that production they didn't have this or that? So no one is doing something new with August Wilson. And he felt like August Wilson needs to blow up off the page. How do you do that? So that's what we're doing here. So if you take that again, thinking about Shakespeare, I think how many times can you see a traditional Taming of the Shrew when there's so many possibilities to take it and put it somewhere else? Also, young people are starting to come to the theater. I mean, every generation, you got to invite these people in, these youngsters who now have so much in the world of technology. How do you invite them into a traditional Shakespeare play? You have to appeal to them in a way that they're going to relate. So you do switch it up a bit. You do say, let's set this in Silicon Valley. I haven't seen that yet, but it's probably coming. I think that if it's done well, then it's great. If it's not thought through, then it's not good. And luckily, the Shakespeare plays I've been in that have been in non-traditional settings have gone really well. And they've been with good directors. But you got to be careful about that stuff.
Do you ever see yourself playing King Lear?
Of course. Catherine Castellanos just played Prospero. What?
What about Mama Rose and Gypsy?
Oh, are you kidding? My sister and I, we watched that all the time growing up. It's like, I don't believe people don't watch musicals anymore. We knew every word to every song. So, of course, I'm coming up roses. Oh, yeah. Mama Gypsy, all the way.
The reason I mentioned that is that on some level, I think, you know, for musical theater, Mama Rose is the King Lear.
That's right. She's the King Lear. She's the Aunt Esther. She's all of that. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes.
You also worked on a piece called Bebop Baby?
Yes.
And that was yours?
Yes, I wrote that and starred in it. It was based on my life growing up in Detroit and my relationships with my two fathers, my stepfather, who was a jazz musician and played with Motown, and my real father, who is still alive and lives in Detroit, and sort of about growing up in the shadow of Motown. Not shadow, but growing up as a daughter of a Motown musician. And I performed with the Supremes and knew the Temptations. And my stepdad had a 15-piece orchestra, which was called the New Breed Bebop Society. So I wrote that with the composer Marcus Shelby, and we had his 15-piece orchestra on stage throughout the play, and it had some amazing music. I wrote the lyrics, and Marcus wrote the music, and it was a great experience. It was kind of a rushed experience, and I would love to revisit it. I think there was some loose ends that needed to be tied up, but it was only 5 nights, and they were all sold out, and all my friends came out to support me. My family came from Detroit. And it was a great experience, and I look forward to getting back to Bebop Baby.
You just said that you performed on stage with, like, the Supremes or the Temptations?
Yes. Well, my dad was the arranger and conductor for the Supremes.
Oh.
So in Toronto, I performed with the Supremes, and the Temptations were also on the bill. But I mean, like, Aretha Franklin, she sang at my mother's funeral. She was a really good friend of my mom's. Martha Reeves was like an aunt. So I grew up with all of these amazing people, and I just saw them as hardworking artists and learned an aesthetic very early about what it means to be a creative artist and how you have to work.
Have you ever been in a musical?
I did musicals in high school. I can't remember that far.
You haven't done any since you've become a professional.
No. The closest I've done would be Spunk that we did at Cal Shakes. We sang a little bit. So the Bebop Baby, I sang a lot. I had to sing. So I had to work on my voice and take some lessons and kind of get back into that.
It sounds like something you would want to do, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love singing. I just don't get a lot of opportunities to do it.
Why is Margot Hall still in the Bay Area instead of L.A. or New York?
Oh, good question. I love the Bay Area. I really do. I love the community. I'm a big fish, you know. Why would I leave? I get opportunities to do plays that I may not ever get to play. I get opportunities to work with really incredible actors who I trust, who I've worked with, who I've built relationships with. I think the quality of theater here is wonderful. I think the type of art that we do here is expansive. I feel like I can say I want to write a play with video and electronic music and stand on top of the side of a wall, and someone would want to produce it. I feel very comfortable here. I never really got into L.A. I visited and wanted to come back home. And New York, I have a lot of friends in New York, and I love New York. And I would go to New York and do a show, but I would come back to the Bay.
Margo Hall, what do you have coming up after Gem of the Ocean?
After Gem of the Ocean, I'm actually directing for SF Playhouse. I'm directing a play called Red Velvet, and it's about Ira Aldridge, who was an African-American Shakespearean actor who worked in Europe. It's an amazing play, so I'm really looking forward to that with Carl Lumley. And then I'm going to be doing Fences again at Cal Shakes.
Same role?
Yes.
One final question. You ever thought about doing something like Noises Off?
Oh, yeah. I would love to do Noises. See, that's what people don't get. You know, my favorite type of humor is like the airplane movies, okay? I love silliness. That's why I had so much fun with Sir Andrew Egerton.
Right, yeah.
Noises Off, I would love to do Noises Off. I would love to do any of those crazy, quirky comedies. So, call me. No.
And your next acting job?
Well, just Fences. And then I'm going to be directing at UC Berkeley while I'm teaching there.
If you've been hearing banging, it's because we're at Marin Theater Company and they're working on
this. The costume shop is right up there.
The costume shop is right above us.
Yes.
You've been listening to an interview with Margo Hall, who plays Aunt Esther in Gem of the Ocean by August Wilson. It's playing now through February 14th at Marin Theater in Mill Valley. For more information, you can go to marintheater.org. I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves.